listening to Creep It Real, everyone. I'm Ashley.
I'm Bianca.
I didn't do my usual...
Hello, this is Creep It Real. You're listening to Creep It Real.
It's so sad that everyone was like, oh, this is
I bet everybody was like, oh, she got it right.
No.
Oh, no.
Oh, goodness.
So, hey, everyone. Welcome back. We hope you enjoyed our episode on Hoodoo just as much as we enjoyed researching it.
Yeah, it was so nice. It was so fun.
Do you know that that episode inspired me to get back into like manifestation practices.
Oh.
I went to Michael's the other day and I got another bullet journal.
Mm-hmm.
And I like started redoing a daily gratitude journal and that's like a daily manifestation, a daily like visualization. Feels really good. I feel like things are like really, yeah, and falling into place for me a little bit.
Oh, good.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, that's my story.
Nice. That's what we can all hope for.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So today's case was suggested to us by Stiglitz, which is a dear friend of ours. And
not his real name.
It's not his name. Real name. We just all call him Stiglitz.
Well, that's
his handle.
Well, I don't even know if it anymore?
That's his handle, on Instagram.
All right.
Who's a dear friend of ours and the guys over at the Bumblebutt podcast. So thank you, Stiglitz.
He's got a real knack for suggestions.
Yeah. He's really great at suggesting suggestions.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks for that.
For our research, we had to do a lot of internet research.
That's all we did, pretty much.
Because there are no books on it.
Yeah. But there's an in-depth article.
There's a super in-depth article from The Cut, which was written in November of 2018 by Reeves Wideman. And the first time I heard it was from a podcast called Fear and Fame.
R.I.P.
R.I.P. Fear and Fame.
Yeah.
But it's the one case that made me nervous to even do my laundry and to be home alone.
Oh, goodness.
I was calling my dog over every time I was folding my laundry. And his name was Ghost. Or his name still is Ghost. But I was like, Ghost.
He's now a ghost in your life.
Yeah. I miss that dog so much. But anyways, I could not leave a room without him. It was so eerie. Like, just listening to the case was so eerie and it creeps me out so much.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, here we go. In June of 2014, the Broaddus family purchased a home that they believed would fulfill their dreams.
Maria and Derek purchased the 6-bedroom home at 657 Boulevard in Westfield, New Jersey in June of 2014 for a whopping $1,355,657. Those little 657.
Yeah, that 657 was really important.
So it was a large, beautiful home.
Maria was raised in the neighborhood in Westfield, and the house they purchased was just a few blocks away from what was her childhood home.
So she probably was fairly affluent growing up.
Oh, I'm sure.
Westfield is a small town that is about 30,000 residents who all describe the place as a laid-back, good old wholesome country town, which is too slow for most young singles that are looking for excitement.
I read that it was like, you know, in the Andy Griffith show,
mm-hmm.
that town.
Oh, yeah.
Mayberry
is what it was
super
called.
Super idyllic.
I don't even really know. Well, idyllic if you're, you know, white.
White.
You know. It's about 45 minutes from New York and was ranked the 99th richest city in America by Bloomberg in 2019. That's pretty serious. I mean, there's a lot of cities in this country.
Yes.
So, okay.
And to be the 99th, to be in the
top 100.
Mm-hmm. Hell yeah.
In 2014, it was listed by the website Neighborhood Scout as the 30th safest town in the United States.
Stage.
I love whenever I can.
You always
I don't
do
know
that.
Why
I don't
I
either.
Do that. That is like such a weird. Who's that? William Shatner kind of thing to do or something.
But no, Sean Connery,
Sean
dude.
Connery, you're right. What the hell? I'm not Scottish. So I kind of was like, well, what does that mean exactly?
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
How do they figure out what's the safest town in America? I'm dubious about what the criteria are and how you come up with that.
I know Murrieta in California was one of the safest, like the top 10 safest.
California. Okay.
Murrieta. You don't know where Murrieta is. It's by Temecula, which you don't know where that is either, but that's fine.
Either way, kind of like we said, it's pretty much an affluent town full of mostly old whites. Great
which
old whites.
Is also Temecula and Murrieta, but that's fine.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And I was thinking you were saying for a minute Florida, and I was like, Florida is the safest town in America?
No.
California.
The most pressing local issues, according to its residents, was the closure of Trader Joe's. After there was a roof collapse and what is called, quote, a rampant scourge of unconstitutional policing.
Oh, that sounds like an old man was getting pissed off about something. Sure.
By which they meant aggressive parking enforcement because, of course, 86% white.
Oh, okay. Oh, goodness. So at one point, according to a local, the boulevard where the Broaddus's house was located was the street to live on. You made it if you lived on the boulevard, is what they would say. And understandably so, as the house was nearly $1.5 million. At that point, 657 Boulevard was probably the most la-di-da on the whole block. Mm. And it was built in 1905. It had, like I said, it had six bedrooms. It was nearly 4,000 square feet.
Jesus.
Had a shit ton of gorgeous windows and woodwork. And the flooring and the ceilings were amazing. Like, you can go look at it on Zillow right now, I think, or Trulia, one of those places. It was, or is, it's beautiful. Like, so beautiful. I was like, oh my God, look at all this stuff. I mean, this is just... $1.5 million house. It's serious. It's so unbelievably beautiful.
So Mr. Broaddus, Derek, grew up working class in Maine, and he moved his way up the corporate ladder at an insurance company in Manhattan to become a senior vice president. And this afforded him a salary big enough to afford the almost $5 million house.
Yeah. I think that's the definition of the American dream.
Yep.
That is there for some people, men particularly. But it is what it is.
Yeah.
The couple had three kids. They were 10, 8, and 5 years old, who had visited the home and played in the yard with other kids from the neighborhood in the days after they bought the home.
So this was just shortly after his 40th birthday that they actually purchased the home.
That's a big $1.5 million birthday present.
No kidding. 40 years old is really young.
Yeah.
To afford a $1.5 million house.
Oh, yeah. I'm only 5 years away from that, and I couldn't afford a $1.5 million. But you just wait. You just wait.
We're coming for your $1.5 million house. So the house is pretty infamous because shortly after their purchase, they began doing work on it like you do when you buy a house.
So the first letter that Derek found after he and Maria spent the whole day painting, it was an evening in June, just 3 days after they purchased the home, and he was there alone at the time. It was in an inconspicuous white envelope, and as he opened it, he clearly had no idea what kind of shitstorm this letter was about to bring upon he and his family. It started off ominously and grew increasingly more terrifying as it went along.
They received multiple letters, but the first they received went like this.
Dearest new neighbor at 657 Boulevard, allow me to welcome you to the neighborhood. 657 Boulevard has been the subject of my family for decades now, and as it approaches its 110th birthday, I have been put in charge of watching and waiting for its second coming. My grandfather watched the house in the 1920s, and my father watched in the 1960s. It is now my time. Do you know the history of the house? Do you know what lies within the walls of 657 Boulevard? Why are you here? I will find out. Ugh. Gross.
The letter had additionally identified the Broaddus Honda minivan, as well as the workers who were renovating the house.
That's too much for me. But it went on to say, I see already that you have flooded 657 Boulevard with contractors so that you can destroy the house as it was supposed to be. Tisk, tisk, tisk. Bad move. You don't want to make 657 Boulevard unhappy. Okay, creep.
What does that mean?
So it's the whole time, and I'll say it a million times, but the whole time I'm just thinking, is this a person? It's a person.
It is.
It is a person. Or there's this other little part of my brain, and I said it somewhere, where it's like, is this a person? Or is this like some entity within the house? It's just that to me, they're both creepy. Like, they're equally creepy in my eyes. I know for most you're like, a real person is creepier, but some of the things that it says are just
a lot.
What are you meaning?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Earlier in the week, Derek and Maria had gone to the house and they chatted with their new neighbors while their children ran around the backyard with several other kids from the neighborhood. The letter writer seemed to have noticed this.
You have children. I have seen them. So far, I think there are three that I have counted. Do you need to fill the house with the young blood I requested? Better for me. Was your old house too small for the growing family, or was it greed to bring me your children? Once I know their names, I will call to them and draw them unto me. Oh, okay. That's what I'm saying. Okay. Is it? That's what I'm like. It's the walls. It's in the walls.
It's not in the... Okay, okay. Well, the other thing about that letter is he also was like, are you going to bring more children? Are you still trying to get pregnant? I'm like, ooh, it's none of your business.
Yeah, but stay out of my sex life, creep. So in the letter again, he says, who am I? There are hundreds and hundreds of cars that drive by 657 Boulevard each day. Maybe I am in one. Look at all the windows you can see from 657 Boulevard. Maybe I am in one. Look out any of the many windows and get over the 657 and 657 Boulevard at all the people who stroll by each day. Maybe I am one. It concluded with a suggestion that this message would not be the last, saying, welcome, my friends, welcome. Let the party begin.
Ugh.
Followed by a signature typed in cursive font, The Watcher. I was a little grossed out that it was him, her, whatever, that named themselves The Watcher.
The Watcher?
Yeah, it's like, I feel kind of like I shouldn't be calling him The Watcher.
It's like those, it's like serial killers who name themselves. It's like BTK who named himself.
I wanted to think of something else.
Sorry.
Oh, I do think that Let the Party Begin is probably the douchiest way that they could have ended that letter possible.
Let the party begin.
Let the party begin. God. So, like I said, it obviously is probably a human being, I know, but part of me thinks it's not. It's like a spiritual force within the home.
I think it is.
It's probably what you think what is.
I think it's a human being.
I know. But there's a little part of me that just keeps going, but what if?
Okay.
I really don't like that it said, you have children. I have, because it does say this, you have children. I have seen them. So far, I think that there are three that I have counted. Yeah, I don't want you gross. Looking at my, look kids, at my kids, you little pedo freak.
But that's like the part that they later get really scared about. You know,
yeah,
obviously they get right. very perturbed with that situation.
It's a little bothersome that you're looking at my kids through the yard.
Yeah.
As you might expect in this situation, Derek was deeply affected by the contents of the letter and terrified. He immediately ran around the house and turned off every single light so that it wasn't lit up for viewing by an anonymous psycho house stalker.
It was at this point that he proceeded to call the Westfield Police Department, because who knows what to do with ghosts better than the police department.
They're the best for everything.
For everything. For literally anything. An officer did come to the house. He read the letter and said, what the fuck is this? Which is what anybody would say. So, you know. He then asked Derek if he had any enemies, and he recommended moving a piece of construction equipment from the back porch, just in the event that this watcher person tried to toss it through the window and create more chaos.
I gotta say, though, I know that anyone would be like, what the fuck is this creepy letter? But I also think it's a little off-putting for the cop to come in and be like, what the fuck's going on?
Yeah.
Watch out. He's going to throw all this shit through your window. Like, they're already terrified, I'm sure. Like, can you not maybe kind of calm, be like, we're going to get some details. We're going to figure out if there's somebody that you suspect.
Yeah.
Anything. Yeah. But it was just like, fuck. Dude, this is shitty. I would hate to be in your situation.
It feels really unprofessional, if we're being quite honest.
Oh, well, you know.
All right.
Okay, so that night, Derek and Maria emailed the previous owners of the home, they were Andrea and John Woods, asking them if they had any idea who might have written them that sick letter, or why they had written that they had asked the Woods to bring them young blood, and it looks like they listened. That's okay. Like, of course, you're going to be like, excuse me, what deal did you make?
Of course.
With the devil?
Yeah. With demons.
With demons. So part of me does also immediately think that maybe this Woods family sacrificed this family to some entity of the house, okay?
Okay.
I'm going to be that person that's saying this. That it's a, 5% chance that this is the case, okay?
So you're going to espouse that the whole time.
The whole time. Because, you know, I mean, who knows? We'll get into more of why I was like, oh, that's weird. But I think they pushed other people away and took these people in.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So Andrea responded to them the following morning and admitted that, yes, they did receive a letter from the Watcher, and that it mentioned a few things, just like their letter did, about the family lineage of watching the home throughout the years, but said that they had lived there 23 years prior, and that was the first letter that they had ever received.
That day, the Woods went with Maria to the police station, and they told Detective Leonard Lugo about the whole situation, and he told her, Maria, not to tell anyone about the letters, including her new neighbors, probably in the same vein that you wouldn't give information about the killing.
Yes.
So that whoever it is doesn't – you don't know the specifics of the situation until – the person is found, and they will know.
Right.
Right.
Then everybody would know all the juicy deets.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and they, the Broaddus family hadn't officially moved into the house. So she, Maria, had never met most of them. But at this point, all of her neighbors and everybody in the neighborhood was essentially a suspect.
That's true. And I can imagine that would be quite a time. Mm-hmm. The home had been incredibly popular when the Woods had put it up for sale, and they'd received multiple offers well over asking price, which led the Broadduses to initially wonder if a scorned potential buyer had sent them the letter. But according to the Woods, one of the potential buyers had backed out due to an unknown illness, and another had found a different home, and perhaps they didn't have kids, and the Woods had to get rid of them to make way for their ideal sacrifice, the Broadduses, to buy their house so that they could sacrifice their children to the Watcher. Mm-hmm.
So trying to buy a house was recognized by all of the local people in the area as treacherous.
I mean, it's kind of like that for a lot of people
right now.
Yeah.
In the rest of the United States, that's not the top 100 richest neighborhoods. One resident was quoted as having said, "There's a lot of money and a lot of ego. I've seen bidding wars where friends lost by $300,000. Bidding wars don't go that high. I mean, here they do. But $300,000 is the cost of a home.
Yes, I was like, I thought that I was, my home was somewhere under $300,000. Yeah. And I was like, doo-doo-doo-doo-doo, I'm rich. I'm rich. At the time. This was a long time ago. But yeah, $300,000 is as much as you're getting outbid on a home.
Right.
Kill me.
That's
that leaves nothing for any of the rest of us.
No, exactly.
So obviously, this led to the couple, Maria in particular, becoming increasingly paranoid about the safety of the kids, and she kind of became a little bit of a helicopter parent about them. She kind of panicked whenever they would be playing in the yard and they would get out of eyesight. She was just kind of like frantically screaming their names whenever they would be in the yard. Mm-hmm. So that's just something to keep in mind as we go along.
In the coming weeks after they received the initial letter, they were obviously very nervous. Derek even canceling a work trip, and if Maria took the kids to the new house, she would yell their names if they went into a corner of the yard, like you just said.
Kid! I don't know their name.
Weirdly, Derek gave a tour of the renovation to a couple on the block.
You know what, though? People love to do that
People
shit.
Love that, but like, if you're in this situation...
That's a little strange,
don't do
actually.
That.
Yeah, actually, great point. I was like, you know, there was a whole Curb Your Enthusiasm episode where Larry, his manager, and his wife buy a new house, and she's like, "You want a tour?" And he's like, no. And she's like,
and then they leave.
And she's so pissed about it.
So
like,
they leave.
He has to come back and take another tour. And I've always been like, yes, because I don't care. Like, I really don't care.
My parents used to do that
with
like guests, which fine, that's fine. But like now that I'm thinking back on it, I'm like, who cares?
Well, great. Now I've just besmirched your whole family.
No, that's fine. My grandparents did the same thing. But like looking back, I'm like, I don't think they really gave a fuck.
Anytime anyone ever asks, like, you want a tour? And I've said, oh yeah. It's only because I'm trying to
be polite. Yeah, for sure.
You know.
But the wife told Derek, it'll be nice to have some young blood in the neighborhood.
That is weird.
Which is weird that she would say.
That's weird.
That's a weird phrase.
No, and I talk about it like in a little while, because one of them would talk about like a synopsis of the suspicious events. But it's weird, but would it be as weird if this wasn't if it wasn't in the context of this situation? I'm like, I've probably heard people say that before.
Yeah.
But because it's being said, it's like, what the fuck is this lady doing?
Right.
You know?
Right. It's just that kind of coincidence that that was said.
And it makes it really
weird.
But maybe it's not. But it could be weird.
Right.
It's possible.
Fair. So the general contractor had arrived one morning to find that a heavy sign that he had hammered into the front yard had been ripped out overnight. And 2 weeks after the first letter arrived, Maria stopped by the house to look at some, I guess, paint samples and to check the mail. She then recognized the same thick black lettering on a card-shaped envelope and again called the police.
Oh, no.
The letter said,
"Welcome again to your new home at 657 Boulevard. The workers have been busy, and I have been watching you unload carfuls of your personal belongings. The dumpster is a nice touch. Have they found what's in the walls yet? In time, they will." Oh, shut the fuck up. Now I'm just like, shut the fuck up. You're just like, I'm going to scare you till you don't want to live here anymore. Yeah,
that's stupid. So this time, the watcher had addressed direct.
A-A-Ron.
This time, the watcher had addressed Derek and Maria directly, misspelling their names as Mr. and Mrs. Braddus, which was spelled as B-R-A-D-D-U-S.
Versus the absolutely inane way they spell it.
B-R-O-A-D-D-U-S.
Yes.
The scary part of this particular letter was the idea that the watcher had been close enough to learn their last names. He bragged about having learned a lot about the family in the weeks prior, especially about their children, and identified their three kids by birth order and their nicknames.
Oh, dear.
Which Maria had been yelling when they went into the corner of the yard.
Kid! "I am pleased to know your names now and the names of the young blood you have brought to me. You certainly say their names often." Well, are you? Well, mind your business. The letter then asked about one child in particular, whom the writer had seen using an easel inside an enclosed porch, asking, "Is she the artist in the family?"
That's troubling. An enclosed porch?
Right.
Why are you looking? It's enclosed.
Right.
For a reason. It's not meant for you to see.
As we'll see when I go over some of this stuff a little bit more, that doesn't make any sense.
The letter continued.
"657 Boulevard is anxious for you to move in."
Oh, God.
I'm starting to get a sexy vibe from these letters.
You're starting to get turned on and it's weird.
"It has been years and years since the young blood ruled the hallways of the house. Have you found all of the secrets it holds yet?" Man, they will not stop asking that. "Will the young blood play in the basement, or are they too afraid to go down there alone? I would be very afraid if I were them. It is far away from the rest of the house. If you were upstairs, you would never hear them scream. Will they sleep in the attic? Will you all sleep on the second floor? Who has the bedrooms facing the street?"
Whose business is it? It's none of your business.
"I'll know as soon as you move in.
Ugh.
It will help me to know who is in which bedroom. Then I can plan better." Oh, my God. This person has...
You think it's try-hardy?
A limp dick
syndrome. You think it's try-hardy? I think it's try-hardy.
Yes. It's such an angsty...
Yeah.
Yeah. It's angsty, and it's really obvious that there's some vendetta, and they're just trying to scare them from...
Yeah, okay. The house.
Or it's a ghost, everybody. It's possible. "All of the windows and doors in 657 Boulevard allow me to watch you and track you as you move through the house. Who am I? I am the Watcher and have been in control of 657 Boulevard for the better part of 2 decades now. The Woods family turned it over to you. It was their time to move on and kindly sold it when I asked them to."
Real quick, I just remembered. So if you're a realtor, you can look up titles and who purchased a house.
Right.
It's very easy, actually.
Yeah.
And if you, like, go on Spokeo or whatever, you can do the same thing.
Well, and just going to county records. Anybody can do it
exactly,
if they pay.
Exactly.
Because I do it all the time for work.
Exactly. So is it a neighbor? I mean, it's so easy to find out these people's names.
Okay, we can talk about it more as we start discussing it. When we discuss our theories or whatever.
Fair.
Oh, so first of all, they sold it when I asked them to? Mm-hmm, I bet. So 657 Boulevard is my job, my life, my obsession. And now you are too, Braddus family. Welcome to the product of your greed. Greed is what brought the past three families to 657 Boulevard, and now it has brought you to me. Have a happy moving in day. You know I will be watching.
Derek and Maria stopped bringing their kids to the house because of their discomfort with a random-ass individual writing letters to them about
their
kids.
Going, "I saw your daughter painting in an enclosed room."
Yuck. they were no longer sure when or even if they would move in. And several weeks later, a third letter arrived stating,
"Where have you gone to? 657 Boulevard is missing you." Okay, so let's break down some of these creepy little things that are going on in these letters. Let's break them down. They addressed the Bradises by name. So does that mean that someone, like you were saying, did someone look them up? Did somebody actually overhear it in person? Was somebody standing so close that they heard them calling their children? See, that's the thing. They don't have children's names on the county documents.
That's true. But in 2014, there was Facebook and MySpace. Girl, I do so much looking up with people.
She has, Maria does have a Facebook account, which people chastised her about. And he has a Twitter that I went and looked at. Or is this just some kind of misdirect to give them the idea that they just learned their names? You know, that's the other thing I was thinking is some of this stuff sounds like somebody has something against this family. It doesn't necessarily have to be the neighborhood. It could just be that they don't like them. And they're like, you got this nice ass house? Well, I'm going to fuck that up for you.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's what I was going to say. I wonder if all of the things that were referenced in the letters were said out loud outside of the home, or is this something that some of the stuff was said inside the home or done inside the home that was seen? That easel part, the where they talked about the easel, the kid being the Buffalo Bill comment about the easel
in the enclosed
porch. Room is only seen, and maybe we, I think we probably, I probably do talk about it, but it's only seen from a certain certain angles. So it would have to be very specific, unless you were just walking by and quickly like popped up with a binoculars or something.
Yeah, because that's normal.
Well, right. You think someone would notice that. Oh, I would like to know if the Woods were selling their house before they got that letter, or if they got that letter and then decided to sell their house. Because that really does kind of give some of their actions either the clearance for not being shady or they're shady as fuck.
Right.
But I mean, I didn't find that out.
All right.
and then it says that they pass by many times a day. So surely if you put a camera face in the street,
you can figure out who's passing by 20 times a day.
Unless they're just coming in disguises or car.
But no, seriously.
Yeah.
But if you have the money, do that. I don't.
Well, in worst case scenario, you catch some paranormal caught on tape stuff.
Yes. Best case scenario.
Yeah, case scenario. You're right.
The renovations had been mostly interior, and the people who lived nearby said that they actually hadn't noticed an unusual amount of noise, even from the jackhammering in the basement.
That's kind of weird, isn't it?
That there was jackhammering in the basement?
No, that no one heard the jackhammering of the ground? It's a basement. In the neighborhood?
I don't know. It's a base. I don't know.
Maybe that house has a... Me too. But maybe that house has a spiritual force field around it.
Okay. When Derek and Maria walked Detective Lugo around the house, they showed him the easel on the porch and that it was hidden from the street by vegetation, making it difficult to see unless someone was behind the house or right next door. A few days after the first letter, Maria and Derek went to a barbecue across the street, which was welcoming them and another new homeowner to the block. They hadn't told anybody about the watcher because they were told not to and because you don't want to give out pertinent information. And they found themselves scanning the party for clues while keeping tabs on their kids, who ran as carefree as can be through a crowd that made up all of the suspect pool.
Pretty much everybody was a suspect in that party.
Yeah, exactly. Maria said that they were screaming at them to stay close and people probably thought they were crazy, but who knows if who knows if the neighborhood was like gaslighting them, like as far as old money and new money was concerned. Do you know what I mean? Like maybe that's another theory that maybe they didn't like new money. I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah, it is weird. So it's weird. Obviously, the suspicious circumstances. There was just a shit ton of suspicious circumstances. And so like the letters, for example, were processed through the Northern New Jersey's Kearney Distribution Center. And the first one was postmarked on June 4th, which was before the sale of the home was made public. The home had never had a for sale sign up until that one contractor showed up and put the sign on for renovation. renovations. There was never even a sign in the yard at all to indicate mm-hmm. anything was going on mm-hmm. with the house. And once the construction guys showed up, that it was mostly interior renovations, so they didn't really understand if it was giving that away to anybody. All that details about the construction and how you were ruining the... They want the house
to... The integrity of the neighborhood.
I mean, well, it's also like, this house was built in 1905. Mm-hmm. You know, you need to restore and renovate in order for the house to not be a dilapidated piece of shit.
Right.
So, regardless, I wonder how someone could have figured that out, though, the sale of the house. Maybe, I guess, if you are super sleuthing it and you were already watching out for it, or maybe you are a realtor or somebody who has access to that information already.
That to me, unless they put it up, like, if they put it up for sale by owner, a realtor... And that's not necessarily on the MLS.
Yeah.
So it's not going to show up unless a realtor is scouting it, you mm-hmm. know? Like, I don't know.
Well, and I doubt that 1.5 mil was
for sale by owner.
Yeah, that's so true. No FSBO. I've never seen that before. So it was listed, I'm sure. So if it was listed, then that means that there were some people who were aware that there was maybe an active...
So then the general public wouldn't know yeah. that there was a house for sale.
And the county doesn't usually record stuff like exactly. right away.
Exactly. They recorded the day of the close of escrow.
And even then sometimes it's like, it's jacked up. It's, you know, it's delayed or it's wrong or whatever.
Right.
So you can't count on that. So right. if it happened before the public knew, it was a select group of people who would be able to know.
Right.
And to me, that makes it seem like it's somebody who either the people who are selling the house or the Broaddus's knew already doing to them.
We'll get into that in a second, okay. But their next door neighbor.
Oh, the suspicious people?
Right.
Okay.
So
also, they hadn't moved into this house, but Derek had been going back to the house due to the alarm being set off. And what the article was saying was occasional frequency, but I'm like, any amount is somewhat frequent.
Yeah.
Like, how much should an alarm be going off in a vacant house?
No, that's weird.
That is weird. And so I'm interested to know if there were windows open or like doors open. Like, what exactly was it that set the alarm off? Mm-hmm. And did he catalog that? Like, what was it? Was it someone trying to actually break in, or was it a spirit from within?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It could have been.
You always think it's a spirit.
I don't always.
So at one point, Derek was chatting with a neighbor of his, John Schmidt. He lived two doors down, and John...
If I still pity, would you call me Superman? Isn't that band?
Is that Alanis Morissette?
Two doors down.
Oh, isn't that three doors down?
Oh, shit. I was like, it's so perfect. It just is right there. Okay.
All
right. Okay, sorry.
When John Schmidt told him about the Langfords who lived between them. Peggy was in her 90s and several of her adult children were all in their 60s and lived with her.
Oh.
He said that the family was a bit odd but harmless. He did describe one of the younger Langfords, Michael, who didn't work and had a beard like Ernest Hemingway, as kind of a Boo Radley character.
Old man in the sea.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And this description made Derek come to the conclusion somehow that the case was solved.
Mm-hmm.
The Langford house was right next to the easel on the porch. The family had lived there since the 60s. And this was when the watcher's father, the letter's son, had begun observing 657 Boulevard. Richard Langford, the family patriarch, had died 12 years earlier. And the current watcher claimed to have been on the job for the better part of two decades. Since the 80s, I've been watching your house.
Oh, thanks. Well, okay. So according to Sandy Langford, Michael's sister, he had been diagnosed with schizophrenia when he was young. And the detective Lugo that was working the case said that 1 week after the letter was sent, he took Michael in for questioning, and he denied knowing anything about the letters, that there just wasn't anything that was real hard evidence that they could really do anything with as far as Michael was concerned. And obviously, it kind of pissed Derek off because Derek had been like, well, we found him. This is it. We got the guy. Mm-hmm. And they were like, we just don't really have enough evidence to say that he did any of this stuff.
He kind of came to that conclusion by himself.
Who?
Michael Langford was a person. He like kind of came to that
conclusion. Oh, Derek did?
Yeah.
Well, I think it was just like grasping at straws probably.
For sure.
But it's unfortunate because I feel like he had tunnel vision and kind of ignored every person in his life up to that point. Mm-hmm. Up to da, da, da. That said, Detective Lugo had said that they wouldn't get any more letters after he spoke to Michael, and they did. So that is another reason why they thought it's probably not him, because it would be pretty careless. Yeah. Though maybe he is just a careless son of a bitch, but who knows? And then also that neighbor, John Schmidt, that you had talked about a minute ago, he said that Michael would go out and get his paper for him every morning and like just do all these little tasks. And he was just not, in his opinion, capable of doing something like those ominous, creepy letters.
Right.
But it's like, so the detective said, everybody that knew him for all these years was saying he was such a great guy. But it's also like, who were you talking to? His mom and his sister and his neighbor? You know, like, of course his mom's going to be like, he's a great, great person. But it's also possible that that is true. And you can't just pin the whole thing on him because he's a little bit weird, you know?
Right.
That's not fair either.
And has schizophrenia. Just because you have a mental illness doesn't mean that you're
going around trying to scare the shit out of people till they don't move in their own home. So the house painter, Bill Woodard, who was helping the Broaddus's renovate their home, he said that there was a couple that lived behind them that had two lawn chairs that were placed in what he called a strangely close position to their yard. And that one afternoon he'd looked out and there was an older guy sitting in one of the chairs. He wasn't facing his own home. He was just right at the edge of his yard, a couple feet from the Broaddus's yard, facing it,
that's
looking
no,
into
there's
their
no reason
yard,
for that.
Which I was like, excuse me now? Oh.
There's no reason for it. Oh. So Michael obviously denied knowing anything about the letters, but the Broaddus family said that Detective Lugo had told them that the quote narrative of what he said matched things mentioned in the letters.
Oh my God.
But there wasn't much hard evidence, and after a few weeks, the police chief told them that unless Michael straight up admitted to them that it was him, there wasn't really much the department could do. Derek said, "This is someone who threatened my kids, and the police are saying probably nothing's going to happen. Probably isn't good enough for me."
Probably you could just somewhat rest on your laurels.
Yeah,
it's not going to happen.
Probably a little.
Just take it easy.
After the second letter, Derek told the cops that if they didn't take care of the situation, they would have a different kind of case on their hands.
Oh, dear.
I wouldn't threaten the police department when you're asking for their help, but that's just me. This person attacked my family and where I'm from. If you do that, you get your ass beat. Like, okay.
Tough guy.
Ooh, you're so tough.
Yeah, you're not that tough, dude. Oh. So he began his own investigation.
Probably costing a lot of money.
His own money.
Yeah, exactly.
Becoming highly focused on figuring out who the anonymous creep was.
Obsessive.
For sure. He set webcams up all over the property and spent nights crouching in dark corners waiting to pounce on anyone that could possibly be watching the house from a close range. That's I understand, but it's verging on troublesome territory.
Yeah,
you could get yourself in some trouble with that kind of psychotic.
It's an obsession.
You know, you're on the offense behavior where you're like, I'm gonna fucking get after anybody that comes around.
Right. He had even detailed a map displaying when each of 657 Boulevard's neighbors had moved in.
That's troublesome.
I don't need you to know when I moved somewhere. You know, I don't need anybody to know that.
I was kind of impressed by his Charlie red string situation.
We always reference Charlie Day every episode.
He's one of the most endearing characters that's ever lived.
I love him. And the Langfords were the only ones there since the 1960s, with overlays marking possible sight lines for the easel and a circle for approximate range of earshot.
He legit had a Charlie board. Like, that is a Charlie board. I mean, it's before Charlie, probably.
I can't remember. To estimate who might have heard Maria yelling their kids' names, and only a few homes fit both criteria.
Well,
that's a red line. That's a red string board
it
situation.
Is 100%, but also I'm also wondering what is the veracity of this information, and like, how did he figure this out? You know, was he just going,
well, they almost
shout
went
from the yard and I'll go walk? How did
that's
he
true. They almost went so far as to get a hacker to help them.
Well, yeah.
Okay, me too. Go ahead.
We have that somewhere.
I know, we do.
Okay. They hired a private investigator who, overall, it didn't come up with anything groundbreaking, but they did find there were two child rapists within a few blocks, and
isn't
in my
that public information?
Yes, they could have looked on that website.
That's what I'm saying.
But, I mean, a child rapist would be a pretty good idea. Like, that's a pretty good suspect, considering they're like, your children's blood is what I want.
He staked out the neighborhood and ran background checks on the Langfords, but didn't find anything of note. Derek reached out to the former FBI agent who served as the inspiration for Clarice Starling in Silence of the Lambs.
I just watched that.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Because they were on a high school board of trustees together?
Oop,
doop. I don't know.
Dorks. So he also reached out to another FBI agent to investigate and assess the level of threat that the family was under from the letters. The former FBI agent Robert Linehan told the family that the writer was an older person due to several old-fashioned tics, and that the envelope was addressed to M/M Braddis with the day's weather.
Mm-hmm.
It was double-spaced sentences, and in a style that he felt that indicated that the writer was a voracious reader.
What if I texted you and I was like, "Dearest Ashley, the weather today is humid and warm." Well, when would you like to record?
I mean, what a nerd. But like, even in a letter, okay, I can see it in a letter.
I guess, like,
but
I
mean, not in this letter.
Really? That's like, 2014.
That's what you might write. Like, that's what my great grandpa might have written. Was like, "Dear Ashley, today the farm looked beautiful and it was 70 degrees." Like, that makes sense.
Right.
But to then follow it up with, "I've seen your children running through the yard and I want to lick their blood
right.
and push their feet into a
I don't think I've got that aggressive, but right, exactly.
Okay.
So he also thought that the surprising lack of profanity, given the level of anger, might mean that the writer was less macho. I guess you got to be profane to be macho.
I guess I just think that's probably an old-fashioned way of thinking.
That feels old. Yeah, that's true.
So they also said that there were a lot of typos and errors, and the person that wrote the letter was not a perfectionist, which is weird, because I feel like if you're going to take all this time to type these letters out mm-hmm. and do all this stuff or write it out, you would make sure you weren't sounding slightly like a fool or mm-hmm. spelling their names mm-hmm. wrong, unless you were trying, like I said, to purposefully misdirect them. So the letters seemed to have kind of a seething anger directed at wealthy people. One of the quotes was, "One of those Hoboken transplants ruining the neighborhood." They said that the house was crying in pain from the renovations that changed it and made it fancy. That it had cries for the past for what used to be when I roamed the halls. So that was an interesting little part.
Tidbit.
Yeah. I said, okay, maybe. So that led them to suggest maybe it was a former housekeeper, perhaps.
But do you think that was another misdirect?
Maybe. It's possible.
I mean, maybe they never roamed the halls, or maybe, I don't know. So the other suggestion is that maybe the watcher was jealous that the Broaddises had bought a home that the watcher couldn't afford.
It's possible.
Linehan, the FBI agent, didn't think that the watcher was likely to act on the threats, but there were enough typos and errors to imply sort of an erraticism. And for example, the first letter was dated Tuesday, June 4th, but that day was a Wednesday. Maybe they got their days mixed up.
Maybe.
I don't know. I get my days mixed up.
I definitely do.
So I don't know that that's necessarily a thing.
Mm-hmm.
The 1960s were a good time for 657 Boulevard when I ran from room to room imagining the life with the rich occupants there.
Huh.
The house was full of life and young blood. Then it got old and so did my father, but he kept watching it until the day he died. And now I watch and wait for the day when the young blood will be mine again. I'm confident. I don't know. I feel like this has got to be the neighbor. Like, I don't think this is a ghost, Ashley.
Okay.
Okay.
So Derek began to have nightmares about confronting Peggy Langford, the 90-year-old woman that lived next door. Or across the street. Which one was it? Next door? Back behind?
Next door.
Next door. And I guess, I don't know why that wasn't a nightmare necessarily, confronting a 90-year-old woman, but he did. And Maria began having nightmares about a man with a pitchfork coming after her kids before she could save them. So obviously they're paranoia was at full tilt, and every single person they encountered in the neighborhood, at the store, wherever they went, appeared to them as a threat. And anyone they felt looked at them funny would get a good old googling later in the night when they went home. So they would just like spend all their free time looking people up so that they could see if this might be the person. At the store, if someone looked at them sideways, they went home and
Googled them?
Find their information.
But what is that?
How do you Google someone with their face? I don't know. I don't know. I guess maybe they figured out before. How do they figure out who it is? It's a small-ish town, I guess. Maybe they're finding out their name. Like, who's that? And then they go home and look them up on Facebook. And okay. I don't know.
All right.
So aiding in their terror of the house was the watcher's increasingly tenuous grip on sanity as the letters began to escalate into an almost like vitriolic rants that I was like, these almost don't even
make sense
yeah. anymore.
Yeah. So, of course, the focus of the investigation remained on the Langfords, and in cooperation with the Westfield police, they sent a letter to them announcing plans to tear down the house. And this was done in the hopes of eliciting a response, like some sort of another letter from the watcher, but nothing actually came of it.
Mm-hmm.
And Detective Lugo brought Michael in for a second interview, but again, of course, got nowhere. And his sister, Abby, accused the police of harassing their family, which, I mean, kind of was.
Kind of, yes. Yes, but also, if it was the police, that's like, you're a suspect in some sort of messed up situation where people are feeling like they can't move into their home anymore. Right. So you should be investigated a little bit if you're a suspect and you haven't been cleared of being a suspect. But also, I can kind of see how tunnel vision.
Yes, yes. You're just focused. Oh, I know it's these people. I know it's these people.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, the Broaddus family hired Lee Levitt, and he was a lawyer who met with several members of the Langford family, as well as their attorney, to show them the letters along with photographs, explaining how their home was one of the few vantage points from which the easel could be seen. Which, ooh. I don't know how I would take that. I'd be like, now I feel like you're stalking me. Like, I feel like it's a reverse. I mean, if they're not doing it, I'd be like, you're reverse. Like, this is a reverse stalking now.
Plus, you know, technically speaking, anybody could be in their yard or in their hanging out on their fence. And I mean, I know it's obvious, but it's a house full of old folks.
Right.
So it's like some stuff might get by them.
Right.
Peggy's 90, you know, like she's not going around like jumping at the window and running after every person that comes by and wants to like take a little binocular peek of at little Bobby painting a portrait. Kid, child,
and the infant. So this meeting obviously grew more and more tense, and Langford's insisted that Michael was innocent.
Though maybe he's not.
But maybe he also is.
Well, I know. But I started thinking about how the letters got more, they broke down in sanity.
Yeah.
Maybe he was having kind of a episode or something. Is an episode a terrible
thing? I don't
think
that's terrible. Okay. I think that's the case. I think that's the word.
Okay.
But by the end of 2014, the investigation had stalled. The watcher didn't leave fingerprints. He didn't leave a digital trail, obviously, because he was sending letters. And there was no way to place someone at the scene of a crime that could have been done from literally any mailbox in New Jersey.
Yeah, and just either delivered to the Kearney office or mailed to the Kearney office.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The letters could be read closely for possible clues, or they were just dismissed as nonsensical ramblings of a sociopath. Scott Krause, who helped investigate the case for the Union County Prosecutor's Office, stated that it was like trying to find a needle in a haystack.
Yeah.
Of course it was, because it's trying to find where this letter came from literally anywhere in New Jersey.
But I mean, also, it makes me wonder, how hard did you question the family about their personal attachments?
Well, and then there's a whole, I think we're going to get into it at the end, and there's like a whole other thing about how much investigation did the police department really do?
Yeah. Right.
And so in December of that year, the Westfield police told the Broaddus family that they had run out of options.
We've exhausted all
every option. All of them. So the renovations were finished within a few months, and that included a new alarm system. But the idea of moving in wasn't something that they were even considering any longer. Even considering that this purchase was a dream come true for them, and $1.5 million house is a dream come true for anybody, right?
No.
Oh, okay. That painter that we were talking about, Bill Woodard, said that they were so joyous about their new home, and then within days, they were petrified. It didn't help that the watcher seemed to be getting more and more unhinged.
And he said that Maria was just barely knew him and was like turning to him with
crying in his arms,
like,
and
just totally panicked all the time.
Yes.
Which, I mean, God, I'm a paranoid individual. And so that would be bad. That would not be good. Mm-mm. I would be a wreck if I felt like I've never been broken into even in my home. And so I always thought, oh my gosh, when I really think about that, that seems very scary to me. Mm-hmm. Obviously for anyone, but it's just such a violation of my personal, you know,
space.
And I wouldn't know what to do with myself. I would definitely not be moving in.
No.
Unless I was just walking around wielding a bunch of giant swords all the time and stuff. I'm a sword wielding kind of gal.
Okay. I guess I'm a hatchet wielding kind of gal.
No. I would be too. I'm like, just let me have a hatchet. Fine.
You're Texan. You should be.
You can't take the hatchet.
All right. All right. All right. You wanted swords. I took a hatchet, but I can't have it.
The minute you had a hatchet, I wanted that hatchet.
All right. All right.
Okay.
So in another letter sent to them, the watcher said,
657 Boulevard is turning on me. It is coming after me. I don't understand why. What spell did you cast on it? It used to be my friend, and now it is my enemy. I am in charge of 657 Boulevard. It is not in charge of me. Who are you trying to convince?
Seems like it is.
I will fend off its bad things and wait for it to become good again. It will not punish me. I will rise again. I will be patient and wait for this to pass and for you to bring the young blood back to me. 657 Boulevard needs young blood. It needs you. Come back. Let the young blood play again like I once did. Let the young blood sleep in 657 Boulevard. Stop changing it and let it alone.
What do you want? Do you want me here or do you want me not here? Sorry, go ahead.
That's exactly... You're seriously now chiding me for not bringing my family here when you were like, I'm watching you. You're going to be destroyed if you live here. I'm going to suck your kids into the walls. And now you're like, why didn't you... come here. I can't believe what you've done to me. And what a little baby, this person. I almost think it's a man. I almost do. Like, I was kind of, I was thinking it was a woman. Oh, wait.
Wait.
I forgot about
that. Yeah, it's fine.
God damn it. Because that sounds like such a little.
I know. So the Broaddus family had sold their old home, and this obviously caused a financial strain on them because now they had to pay the mortgage and they had to pay for expenditures on a house that they didn't even feel safe moving into.
Mm-hmm.
So they moved in with who you want to move in with when you're a married couple.
For sure, with your three children.
Yep. Their in-laws, Maria's parents.
Woot woot.
Maria decided to see a therapist after a routine doctor's visit that began with the question, how are you? And caused her to burst into tears. The therapist said that she was suffering post-traumatic stress that wouldn't go away until they got rid of the house. 6 months after the letters arrived, they decided to sell 657 Boulevard and initially listed it for more than they paid.
Easy as that.
Yeah. That's fine.
Just get
it's just been 6 months. We'll just list make it for some money. More than we paid for it to reflect the renovations they'd done. But of course, in such a well-to-do neighborhood, gossip got around about what was going on with the house and rumors about it began flying.
Which is always the best thing in the world to do is let rumors fly. But again, they were told not to say anything. But
so how are they supposed to know what but
letting
fiction is?
Letting rumors fly just means that George down the street is like, they're raping kids in that house.
Right.
You know?
It's any rumor.
Whatever.
One broker emailed to say that her client loved it, but that there are so many unsubstantiated rumors flying around, ranging from sexual predator to stalker.
The watcher kind of seems like sexual predator.
For sure. That they needed to know more.
So obviously, this, like, we're going to just sell the house is not quite as easy as it first maybe appeared to them to be.
Right.
Eventually, all the difficulties that they were encountering led the Broadduses to filing a legal complaint against the Woodses, who were the previous owners. And they said that they should have disclosed the letter that they received from the watcher, just like they told them about water getting into the basement on occasion, which I kind of agree.
Yes, but that's not the way that real estate works, unfortunately.
Well, I know, but it's just a matter of, like,
if you received a letter, for sure.
Legally, I know they have nothing.
Right.
But as far as just basic human decency, you probably should have told the person once they were actually in negotiations, been like, hey, listen, by the way, I got a letter It was weird. It's the first time it's ever happened. But at least in that case, you're free and clear of it. Otherwise, you've really put yourself in a position that you've put kind of bad out, whether it's because of just omission or you're purposefully
keeping that to yourself.
Right. I'm making a deal with this house devil to come take these people's children one by one. either way about it, you should have been upfront. Otherwise, this is the kind of crap that happens. Even if you didn't have actual legal recourse, you still had to go through some sort of rigmarole because you were like, let's just pretend
nothing happened. Yeah.
But I guess also in their defense, they probably thought it was nothing and they threw it away.
Yeah.
Unless they
said that they hadn't had anything for 23 years. So if you randomly get a letter, you're going to feel like, I don't know, like maybe this is just a one-off. So the Broaddus's sent a partial disclosure mentioning the letters to interested buyers and told their realtor, who was Coldwell Banker, that they intended to show the full letters to anyone whose offer was accepted. Not really, I mean, again, not really necessary.
Yeah, it's like over, yeah.
But, and a lot of preliminary bids had come in much below asking price, but they were not, at this point, they weren't ready to take that big of a financial hit, and they only wanted to share the letters with people who were likely to purchase the property.
Right.
No one even got that far, even after they lowered the price more. And a Coldwell agent who hadn't read the letters told them in an email that they were being unnecessarily forthcoming.
But also, don't be garbage. Yeah.
Right. But regardless, they insisted on showing those letters because Derek said, I don't know how you live through what we did and think you could do it to someone else.
I agree. I do.
Yeah, as a good person, I do too.
I think in any kind of world, if you're thinking about balance, you can't put that bad out there like you're doing without expecting something. And I'm not saying karma, but, you know.
I am.
Well.
Derek and Maria contemplated what they would have done if the previous owners had told them about their letters from the Watcher, or their one letter from the Watcher. The Woods, who were both retired scientists, told the Broaddus's that they remembered the letter they received as more strange than threatening because it was the first one that they received in 23 years. And they had never, ever had any additional issues, and also mentioned that they never felt watched. They said that they rarely even locked the doors. I mean, being in such a well-to-do neighborhood, right?
It's crazy though to think that they never locked the doors in 23 years, hardly, and then this other family can't even move in because of how fearful they are for their lives. Right. So that in itself, unless the Woodses made a deal, then that in itself leads me to be like 99% sure that it has nothing to do with the house. It's them.
The Broaddus's?
Yeah.
But even though they said that nothing ever happened and they rarely locked the doors, the Broaddus family felt the name The Watcher was ominous enough to merit mentioning to a new family moving in. And a year after that, after they bought 657 Boulevard, they filed a legal complaint against the Woods couple, arguing that they should have disclosed the letter. And they had hoped to reach a quiet settlement. Their kids didn't know about The Watcher, and their lawyer assured them that at most, a small legal newswire might pick up the story. Well, on the Today Show a few weeks later, it's a small,
you may
small
have heard of that show.
Show. Local broadcast.
Right.
Tamron Hall said, "We do some creepy stories, and this might be top 10 creepy." A local reporter had found out about the complaint, which included snippets of the Watcher's menacing threats. And after a very late attempt by the Broaddus family to seal it, the story went viral.
Oh, dear.
So this was when there were news trucks camped out at 657 Boulevard, and a local reporter set up a lawn chair to conduct his own watch.
Was he neighborhood watching on his lawn chair?
Yes.
He had beers, a little mini grill. This is like he's camping out looking for a creep, a pedo creep.
The Broaddus family got more than 300 media requests, but with advice from a crisis management consultant referred by one of Derek's colleagues, they decided not to speak publicly to spare their kids even more attention. They eventually left Westfield and went to a friend's beach house.
Oh, that's a tough life.
I know. It's really rough.
Oh, God.
Now they have to go to their friend's beach house. It doesn't have a water softener. Terrible. Eventually, they sat down with their children to explain the real reason that they hadn't moved into their home. So obviously, being kids, they had a lot of questions. Who is this person? Where do they live? Why are they angry with us? And Derek and Maria didn't really have answers, just like you wouldn't have answers to answer to your children why you can't move into your house.
Yeah, they don't have any answers, maybe because they don't want to ask the questions. Mm. I'm starting to wonder what kind of disclosures they didn't, what kind of things they didn't disclose to everyone. Mm-hmm. Was there affair, were there affairs going on? Mm. Did anyone have an affair this whole time? I'm just starting to get real suspicious of these people. I'm sorry.
You went from ghost to affairs.
Oh, it could still be a ghost.
That's fine. Okay. After the letters became public, the watcher for us in the true crime community was a real-life mystery to solve. A commenter on NJ.com suggested ground-penetrating radar to find whatever the watcher claimed was in the walls, but the home inspector had already looked and told Derek the only issue was the aging home's lack of insulation.
Listen up, though. That home inspector did not look in all of the walls of the home.
Mm-hmm. You don't think?
No.
Why?
I've never seen a home inspector
look inside
every wall in a home. They like are looking at very surface level.
They're looking at specific things and they do go through a checklist.
They didn't x-ray the wall.
Yeah. Ugh. And then a group of Reddit users obsessed over a Google Maps street view, which showed a car parked in front of 657 that one user thought had a man holding a camera in the driver's seat. And as Reddit is wont to do, got a lot with it. And so, of course, the most rational comment was that it was probably just a pixelated glare.
Yeah.
The range of proposed suspects included a jilted mistress, a spurned realtor,
a local high schooler's creative writing project,
and guerrilla marketing for a horror movie, which, by the way, the story was made into a movie.
A TV movie.
It's not a real movie.
Okay. It's not a real movie. It's a TV movie.
Some people just thought they were wimps for not moving in, saying things like, I would never let this sicko stop me from moving into a house. Never back down from a terrorist. In Westfield, people were on edge, and Lori Clancy, who taught piano lessons in her house behind 657 Boulevard, might have been the lawn chair person, said one of her students went in for a lesson shortly after the news of the watcher broke and started bawling because she was terrified to walk down the boulevard.
I mean, I can understand that. Also, maybe you did it, so.
Yeah, also, yeah, because maybe it was the lawn chair house.
Yeah, maybe you're a creep. At the Westfield Town Council meeting, Mayor Andy Skibitski assured everyone that the watcher hadn't been heard from in a year and the police investigation was, quote, exhaustive, even though, as we'll discuss, many neighbors had never even been interviewed or even made aware of the situation. So how in the hell are you going to call it exhaustive? Around the time that the Broaddus's received their first letter from the watcher, another family who had lived in their home for years with grown children had also received a letter, but just threw it away, only coming forward after the news broke and investigators tracked down the daughter because she had like made a post on Facebook about how, hey, we received a letter like that too, but we just threw it away because we didn't give a shit because we didn't have little kids. And so that's weird.
That is weird. And it's weird that they weren't told about it. Like there was no. Why did they also receive the letter? I mean, you think it was the same family at the barbecue?
What do you mean?
Because there was another family who moved in. Oh, but it was just a random family.
No, they'd lived there for years.
Yeah. Weird.
I don't know. So was it just a matter of them sending out letters to anybody and then whoever took the bait was who they focused on more? You know, it's kind of like, well, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. So this was, of course, news to 657's neighbors, of most of whom had never heard from the cops, like she just said.
Uh-huh.
And they stated that, quote, we are confused as to how a thorough investigation can be conducted without talking to all the neighbors with proximity to the home.
Duh. That's not even a thorough investigation. That's just a plain out investigation.
That's not even an investigation. That's just like a...
Well, I'm just saying like, oh my, I am a little better. But an investigation means that you fucking talk to the neighbors, dude.
Right.
Anyway, it's ridiculous. Like you're saying that they're the suspect and that the family shouldn't talk to them. But that
you're just telling the family that you're investigating, but without actually doing the research.
How do you say that your neighbors are suspects? Don't give them any details because they might be the ones doing this, and then neglect.
But
to talk
we're also
to them.
Not going
to
do any research.
We're not going to ask them anything.
Yeah,
that's so strange.
Just stay suspicious of everybody.
But then again, when it comes down to it, it's like, this is actually just creepy and not really threatening as much as it could be, I guess. It's like how, it's one of those situations where like, how seriously are the police going to take this?
Right.
You know, because right. they're like, we've got real shit going on. Right. And you're talking about a letter that Person. You wrote yourself, you know, or whatever. I know.
Under the glare of national attention, Baron Chambliss. Baron Chambliss, a veteran detective in the Westfield Police, was asked to also take a look at the case. He said, the Broaddus's are victims, and I don't think they got the support they needed. I don't think so either.
Right.
And he knew his colleagues had looked closely at Michael Langford. According to his brother Sandy.
Oh, was Sandy a brother?
Yeah.
So earlier, sorry everybody, but earlier I did call Sandy a girl, because I mean... Most Sandys I know are girls.
Right.
But I do know a Sandy,
Sandy.
Dude.
Sandy. Sandy. Grease, y'all. Grease.
Which I can't put my seal of approval on it. I'm not sure. But continue. Shut up with your face. Come on.
Like we said, he had been diagnosed with schizophrenia as a young man. Again, not an indicator that he was doing this kind of stuff.
No.
But he was sometimes spooked newcomers in the neighborhood when he did strange things, like he would walk through their backyard or he would peek into the windows of homes that were being renovated.
Okay. Okay. Wait a second, Michael. You're doing stuff.
That's not appropriate.
You're doing stuff that makes it seem like you're the creepy peeping Tom psycho stalker
that
who watches us in too close proximity.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, we'll see.
But those who knew him said that the odd things he did were mostly just unusual neighborly kindnesses. Like we said,
yeah.
John Schmidt had mentioned he went out and got the newspapers for him every morning. And people who had known him for decades said that they didn't think he was capable of writing those types
his
of letters.
His mom, brother, yep. sister, neighbor, everybody who got the paper from him every morning said he was a delight.
He was a nice person.
Which is also, you know, you can only take that with a grain of salt because every fucking serial killer has had somebody that's like, I
can't believe
never...
they did that. They were so nice.
There were legs hanging out of his bed frame.
Jeff Dahmer, his neighbor was like, he was a delight. I was over for dinner. As he looked further into the case, he discovered something surprising. Investigators had eventually conducted a DNA analysis on one of the envelopes and determined that the DNA belonged to a woman.
Mm.
He decided to look more closely at Abby Langford, Michael's sister, who worked as a real estate agent.
What?
Then the questions were raised. Was she upset about missing a commission right next door? She also had worked at the local Lord & Taylor and Chambliss... I don't know what Lord and Taylor
That's a dated reference. It's a dated reference.
What is it?
It's like Dillard's before Dillard's, I think. You know what Dillard's is? Oh, okay. Well, what do you call those places? What do you call
a department store?
Department store. It's a department store.
Dillard's.
Dillard's?
Is that like fancy? Is that like Bloomingdale's or something?
No. It's like
Sears?
No. It's like, what's the one that went Foley's? Do you remember that one? Oh, my God. You know why you don't know this stuff? Because you were shopping at Nordstrom. Yes, that's exactly why. Fuck. Okay, continue on. You're like, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yes. I know. It's
but
okay.
I wasn't shopping there. My mom was shopping there.
Yeah, I know.
Okay. Yeah, I know. And Chambliss coordinated with a security guard there to grab her plastic water bottle during a shift. That feels not
a little iffy that you're...
I don't like that.
You're talking to someone that works with her and having him steal a
water bottle.
That's a little iffy.
I don't
regardless,
feel like that's professional. Like,
it's
no.
not. Well, I don't think you could use that.
No, you can't. There's no way.
Chain of evidence is a little murky.
It totally is.
And you're not a cop anymore.
Right.
But continue.
But he said the DNA sample wasn't a match. Great. So you're just stalking her and grabbing her things. But
that's
it's
nice.
Not a match. It's fine. And not long after, the prosecutor's office gave the Broaddus's some unexpected news, and they wouldn't say why, and they wouldn't say how, but they had ruled out the Langfords.
Well, I'm pretty sure that it's because they had her DNA, and so then you can familial DNA test
eliminate everybody else, and that's why they couldn't say
why. When I saw that in the article, I was like, why are they acting like it's so elusive when we know they got her DNA?
Mm,
that's what happens. Yeah, it's because they had it. And I also have to say that he is a cop, actually. I was saying he wasn't a cop anymore. He's still a cop. Shameless. Chambla. Chambly.
So they were, of course, they were shocked, and I was shocked too until you just explained that. So now I'm no longer shocked, but understandably they were shocked.
Well, I wonder what you thought was the reason.
I don't know. I thought something nefarious. Hmm. They had recently told the prosecutors that they planned to file civil charges against the Langfords and wondered if they were lying to prevent the story from blowing up again. They had moved to the Boulevard in 1961 and never caused a problem for anybody, Sandy Langford had said. And then all of a sudden, Sandy says, this guy gets all these letters and people are pointing fingers.
I do have to say that I really don't know. I don't know how I feel about this, that you're going to file a civil lawsuit in what regard?
Harassment?
The Langfords were going, I thought that the Broaddus's were going to file a lawsuit against the Langfords.
No, and I think, like, they were. I think that is what it's saying.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, harassment.
I don't know. Maybe the Broaddus's felt like the Langfords were harassing them, and therefore they had the opportunity.
Yes, if they wrote the letter.
Right, but they were so convinced.
Yeah, you have no ground to stand on.
No, there is no ground, okay. But they were convinced.
Okay.
Anyways.
I really do wonder, though, about that real estate agent aspect of it, because
I do too.
We were talking about how you would have to the aspect of this case that I don't really think I see focused on as much is that you would have to have a small circle of people that would have been able to send the letter, the first letter, before the actual public sale of the house. Mm-hmm. Somebody has inside scoops, like. So a real estate agent would be one of the only people, perhaps, that could have access to that information that wasn't related to the family in some way or connected to the family in some way. Or the one that sold the house. Okay.
So at this point, they were left without suspects, and the Broadduses reopened their personal investigation.
Oh, dear.
They still weren't sharing with their neighbors, who were still suspects. But they did spend an afternoon walking along the block with a picture of the handwritten envelope and hoped that someone might recognize the writing from some sort of card.
Oh, my God. I'm sorry, you Broadduses. I really am. I'm really sorry because this is so stressful. But that's weird and, like, out there, man.
Yeah.
That's really grabbing
at straws.
Grasping for straws. Yeah.
But the only encounter that they had was when an older man who lived behind their house said his son joked that the watcher sounded like him.
That's less weird than it'll be good to have young blood running around this house. Mm-hmm.
A neighbor across the street was the CEO of Kroll, a security firm, and they hired the company to look for handwriting matches, but found nothing, and hired Robert Leonard, who was a forensic linguist, but they didn't find any noteworthy overlap. When he went on local online forums for similarities to their writing, aside from the fact he said that it sounded like he watched Game of Thrones. I don't know why. Oh, because Jon Snow is considered the watcher of the Watchtower of the North or what. I mean,
okay, but that's
the Wall.
The Watcher was around a long time before that stupid show. I'm just kidding.
No, 2014. I just have never watched it.
No, the Watcher, like the idea of a Watcher, not this Watcher. Like the Watcher has been before, is what I'm saying.
Careful, Holly and Daniel love
I know
Game of
know.
Thrones, and so do I.
And I was kidding. So does Cody. So does Adam. Everybody loves it. Everybody I know loves
literally
games.
Everybody.
Games of Thrones.
Games of Thrones, you grandmother.
Games of Thrones. Yeah, but so I don't know. That's a kind of a weird reach, I would say. So the Broadduses began to get a little more out of control in their quest to find the Watcher and seek justice, leading to Derek nearly hiring a hacker to attempt to break into the neighborhood Wi-Fi networks and peruse their data. And that turned out to be something a little more difficult than they realized, I think, but also illegal.
Yeah, slightly illegal.
It's like, oh my goodness, dude. And the quest to find... there are stories like this. To me, I feel like he's withholding information, maybe. Because he's so psychotic about trying to find
whoever
these people. He's looking at all these outside people. Mm-hmm. What about people that know you?
Right.
Who's the mistress? Who's the jilted mistress?
That was like a theory that, maybe there was
a
jilted
mistress. I thought the police had a person that they thought. Well,
that
regardless.
So Chambliss and the Westfield police were back at square one. They asked Andrea Woods for a DNA sample and interviewed her son, who was 21, and was obviously surprised that all of a sudden he became a suspect, even though the DNA on the envelopes was female. But maybe the DNA on the letters was
the mail carrier.
Exactly.
Maybe it was, because I feel, maybe. I really feel like, even though the police detective thought, or the former FBI guy thought the writing seemed feminine because there wasn't, fuck you.
Yeah.
I think it sounds like a total guy.
I think it sounds like an old man, to be honest with you. Like, that sounds like an old...
Like an emasculated man is what it sounds like to me.
Okay.
He's like, That's how I, like, that's the vibe I get off of every single letter.
I love when you make that, frowny face. So a year after the fact, obviously, it's going to be hard to find fresh leads. And the initial police canvas had been so poorly conducted.
Yeah.
That it missed a significant, one significant clue that was that another family on the boulevard had gotten a similar note from the watcher.
Pretty serious clue. I mean, that's another reason why you go talk to the fucking rest of the neighborhood, so that you can see if anyone else has gotten this shit.
Exactly.
Holy moly. they really did a poor job.
So, and then one night, Chambliss and a partner were sitting in the back of a van parked on Boulevard, watching the house through binoculars. Then around 11, a car stopped in front of the house, long enough for him to become suspicious. But how long is that? Is that like 10 minutes? Like, how long does it cause you, like, what arouses suspicion?
I think any amount of time beyond, like, maybe 10 seconds is suspicious for you to be just stopping in front of a home. Unless you're doing, I don't know what you'd be doing. Fair. I don't know why you would be stopping in front of someone's house.
He said he traced the car to a young woman in a nearby town whose boyfriend lived on the same block. And the woman told Chambliss, because he confronted her, that her boyfriend was into, quote, some really dark video games, including,
ooh.
I know, ooh, video games.
This old-timey fuck.
Yeah, I know. Where one he was playing as a specific character called The Watcher. As for the female DNA, he figured that the girlfriend or someone else could have helped, and he was living somewhere else at the time, but said that the boyfriend agreed to come in for an interview on two occasions. He never showed up either time.
Probably because he was like, I don't give a fuck about some fucking letters, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't want to come in and talk to you, your old asses.
Exactly. So he obviously didn't have enough evidence to compel him to appear, and with the media attention dying down with the case, he dropped the case and moved on. For the rest of Westfield, the story became only a little bit more than a creepy urban legend, and no one who had lived in the house before the Woods family could recall anything unusual, and it was also hard for people to imagine that their perfect little neighborhood could have something so sinister.
Mm-hmm.
A woman who lived there said that after the news broke, she and 10 or so of her neighbors had gathered in the street to puzzle out who might have sent the letters.
Okay.
Eventually coming to the consensus that maybe the Broaddus's had sent the letters themselves, which...
Yes, obviously many people began to think it was an elaborate scheme to scam the Woods's out of millions of dollars.
Yeah.
But the suit against them obviously was dismissed, so they didn't get anything out of it. And I don't think that's really what it was.
No.
Of course, the public is going to turn on them. You know, that happens in generally all cases of anything in the public.
Right.
And it's possible that they concocted this whole story themselves, but it doesn't seem likely considering that they did end up losing out on $400,000 in the sale of their home, which sold for like, I think it was like $950,000, which is a shit ton of money.
Still.
Don't get me wrong.
But it's still, still lost out on as much as you would buy a nice house for.
Yeah. I mean, yes, exactly. And it's definitely a little bit difficult. I mean, I feel bad for them, but at the same time, it's like, you lost the amount of money as a very nice house,
right.
You know, like in the deal. So you're not hurting. It's like, it sucks that it happened.
So I slightly don't feel bad for you.
Yeah. It's hard to feel too bad for you when you bought a house for 1.5 and you're selling it for $950,000.
Right. So the theory was that they suffered buyer's remorse or realized suddenly that they couldn't afford the home and had concocted a scheme to get out of the sale.
I don't think that's...
Or that he was cooking up some sort of insurance fraud, or they were angling for a movie deal.
Insurance fraud? Excuse me, what kind of insurance can you file about a harassing letter?
I have no idea.
I have the harassing series of letters insurance coverage.
Like, oh, you don't have that?
No.
Oh.
Hmm.
Oh, wow. That's in you. That's in my insurance. Oh, it's so weird.
It would be.
Shut the fuck up.
It would be.
But, or that they were angling for a movie deal, which they had received several offers, but they did turn down. And like we mentioned earlier, Lifetime eventually released a movie called The Watcher.
Oh, very creative.
Yeah. Yeah, very. And, but here were the differences in the movie. The couple in the movie was biracial.
Mm-hmm.
And then the letters were signed The Raven.
Oh, The Raven. The Raven. A Edgar Allan Poe fan.
Yes.
Oh, God. Okay.
So some locals, like we were talking about earlier, about the, it's the American dream. Some locals found it interesting that over the course of 10 years, they had upgraded from a $315,000 house to a $770,000 house to a $1.3 million house.
It's the American dream, you fucking old money pieces of shit. Fuck off. I know the American dream is a joke now,
right.
But still, the fact that you can start off by the with meager living of a $315,000 house and then with time and moving up in your company, mm-hmm. begin to make enough money that you can then buy a $770,000 house and then a $1.35 million house. That's just what happens when you are born into money.
Our peasantry shouldn't allow for that. Don't you understand?
I will say that it's very, very unlikely for people to
for sure.
go from not making millions to being a millionaire. Mm-hmm. The, you know, the top 2%, most of the, it's like some staggering figure is like 98% of them or 99% of them were born into it.
Mm-hmm.
But and we all are fucked and don't have any chance to do it.
Right.
But some of us might have a chance, mm-hmm. you know, and so it's really annoying. Of course, those rich pieces of garbage are like, now I'm starting to – I'm changing my opinion.
Yeah, yeah.
It's all the
How
neighbors.
How could they do that?
It's all the neighbors, all the old – it's the old money all got together, wrote these letters.
Dude, old money are such fucking assholes. The thing about people sorry if anybody that listens to us has old money.
Oh, sorry about you. You're old
sorry
millions
about your wealth.
In case you're an old millionaire that we're besmirching your family's honor.
I apologize for your wealth, but like – they don't have the same kind of humility that somebody who goes from the type of rags to riches story has.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, that person had to work for it, had to go to school for it, had to – knew that they had to work their fucking asses off for it,
mm-hmm.
and got there.
Yeah.
The old money thing is – Oh, Papa has this money. I'm just going to have a small $1 million loan so that I can become a model.
Or in your case, daddy.
Wait, my dad came from the poorest neighborhood in Costa Rica.
I believe it. Let's keep this boat moving forward.
All right. So a few weeks after the letters became public, there was an article published in the Westfield Leader.
Which is just like the local paper, obviously. A big neighborhood
paper.
Yes.
Where anonymous neighbors were quoted asking why they kept renovating a house they weren't moving into. Or questioning whether they had really done that much renovating at all.
What? What difference does that make?
Nope. It's questionable. It even cast doubt on Maria's commitment to her family's safety, even though they never fucking moved in.
Right.
Citing as evidence the fact that she had a public Facebook page with a photo of her kids. Are you kidding me? You can't have a Facebook page with your kids.
I'm pretty sure every mom out there almost has a Facebook page with their kids.
Have you seen how many Amy has posted?
Hello, Oliver.
Hello.
Hi, Ollie.
The paper did note that the police had tested Maria's DNA and it didn't match.
Yeah.
So obviously none of the theories made any logical sense, and they had answers to every question. For instance, how does somebody go from a $300,000 house to a $1.3 million house in 10 years?
Oh, no.
To which
me and Derek both said it's America.
It's America. But they weren't speaking publicly, and the rumors, of course, persisted. They hadn't known how their neighbors would react to the news about the Watcher, but they had lived in the area for a decade, and Maria's family had been a part of the community for much longer, so it was shocking to find themselves accused of being con artists.
Because nobody has any loyalty, and they'll just turn on you at the split.
Absolutely. To Derek, it seemed that some in Westfield preferred the conspiracy theory to considering whether the town might be home to a menace.
What? People like conspiracy theories?
So weird.
That's strange. I never would have known.
And although Maria looked back fondly on her childhood, she was born a few years after the Westfield resident John List infamously murdered his wife, mother, and three children in their home, and also remembered a period when she and other kids were warned to look out for a strange van driving around town.
Oh, my.
So, I mean, so was I.
Yeah, everybody. Yeah, there was always the strange van. Yeah, the rape van.
A lot of locals seemed more concerned that the national press might ruin Westfield's good name.
Property value goes down whenever you know there's a watcher on the
loose. Exactly. Some were primarily worried about arson, vandalism, or whether the Broaddus's would maintain the lawn.
I swear to God. I swear to God. This town.
Burn it.
This is what happens when you let old white people just fester in a place for too long without any interference from anyone else. They're just in a bubble of, like, literally their main concern is that these people haven't moved into their home and maybe their lawn won't get mowed every week. Are you kidding me?
Mark LaGrippo, who was the neighborhood's representative on the Westfield Town Council, said the primary concern he heard from the residents was that they were worried about their property value and the stigma of the neighborhood.
Yeah. Well, they have their priorities in order. Well, I mean, I will say, it is a lot of, you know, money's a fucking thing that we all need.
Yeah.
It happens.
2 years after the Watcher's letters arrived, they borrowed money from family members.
Money.
To buy a second home in Westfield. Using an LLC to keep the location private, smart.
Yeah.
But staying in town was stressful. The first time Maria let her daughter go to the pool with her friends, she stared at the tracker on her daughter's iPhone the whole time. Mm-hmm. And one of their kids was in a language arts class when the teacher led a debate about whether the family in a book they were reading should move to Westfield. Weird. The class thought that they should in part of how because of how safe it was. Afterward, one of the kids told the Broaddus's child, "My parents told me that no matter what your family says, Westfield is safe."
Oh, God.
Fuck you, you little fuck.
Oh. I mean, it's like, who cares?
Right.
Okay.
So they still had to figure out what to do with 657 Boulevard. Their lawsuit was pending and was unlikely and it didn't succeed. While some states require sellers to disclose transient social conditions like murders or possible hauntings, California does require that. New Jersey didn't. Derek then looked into renting the house to a department of the VA and a company that runs halfway homes, which probably wasn't going to look too good for the beautiful citizens of Westfield.
Yeah, you know, those old folks were like, a halfway house?
No.
That's like saying that they're wanting to move in a black family next door. What?
God forbid. Feeling like they were out of options, the real estate lawyer proposed the idea to sell the house to a developer who could tear it down and split the property into two sellable homes.
So dramatic. The house is in perfectly fine condition.
No. Unsellable. They thought they could get $1 million for the lot, and subdivisions like this had become common in Westfield, much to the chagrin of many locals, 657 being one of the neighborhood's largest lots. However, dividing it would require the Westfield's planning board to grant an exception, and two smaller lots would be 67.4 and 67.6 feet wide, just shy of the mandated 70 feet.
Listen, I'm fairly positive that they could apply for a permit for this. I do this every day.
Well, when the proposal was announced, Facebook groups lit up. Some expressed sympathy, while others pointed out that real estate is always a gamble. And another whole group was convinced that it was the culmination of a long con.
I don't know about that.
I mean, I don't know about that either.
What did they get out of it?
Nothing.
Nothing.
They lost money from it.
Nothing. And I just think it's like one of those things where it's out of control. Like, mm-hmm. it's out of control, and there's really not going to be anything probably productive.
Right.
That comes from any of this speculation. And here we're doing it too.
Not at all.
So when the planning board met to decide the application in January of 2017, it had already devoted a 3-hour hearing to the issue, and over 100 residents showed up to the thing. One of them, who lived across the street and had a daughter that had the same, or that was the same age as one of the Broadus's kids, had retained a lawyer to fight the proposal that they had to put those two houses in the lot. James Forrest, the Broadus's attorney, explained that the 3-foot exemption, which is really not that much, was as narrow as the easel he was using to display a map of the neighborhood, a map that showed that several of the lots on the block were also too small, but those probably were platted before this law came into play. The neighbors expressed concern that the plan might require knocking down trees and
God forbid, not the trees.
And everybody was essentially just aghast. I know there was one person that their main concern was, are you going to put a driveway? I'm going to have to look out my window and look at a driveway. I've been looking at a beautiful front of a home for all these years, and now you're telling me that I might have to look at a garage or a front-facing garage or a driveway? It's just, you know, everybody
God forbid.
Yeah, this whole area is just first world problems.
For sure.
Beyond.
Not even first world problems. 1% problems.
Yeah, 2% problems.
So after the lawyers, neighbors stood to speak, and a neighbor from across the street said the proposal would spell the end of the 600 block of Boulevard as we know it. A woman whose kids had been to the Broadus old home for a family birthday party spoke on behalf of nine neighbors and presented 657 as Westfield's Alamo. Which, you know, Ashley, the Alamo. No, don't forget it.
Remember the Alamo.
Don't forget it. Our neighbors are constantly under attack from turf, parking decks, you name it.
Oh, my God. The horror. The horror.
If we can't make a stand on Boulevard, where can we? At one point, Abby
Langford. God, I wish you would fight for something that actually meant something, lady. Jeez.
At one point, Abby Langford
said
she had spent almost 60. Oh, there it is.
So Abby Langford was the one that was like, I don't want to look out at a driveway.
The whole thing just screams privilege and literally the most arbitrary reasoning.
Right.
Trees?
Yeah.
A driveway?
Mm-hmm.
Lights?
Yeah.
Turf.
Don't you dare put a fucking driveway in my sight.
It lasted for hours, this hearing. And, of course, there was very little discussion of the reason the Broadus's had been driven to tear down their dream home in the first place. Tom Higgins, who lived across the street, said toward the end of the hearing, has anybody thought about whether or not this lunatic is and who and has he been apprehended? And even so, it was pointed out that there was no guarantee the watcher would send letters to the two new houses, and argued that aesthetics should rule the day.
I mean, I do think it's stupid to tear down a perfectly delightful house that was built in 1905 because you got a scary letter.
I agree, but people weren't buying the house, and people were being were people not interested in buying the house, or were they just being stupid and trying to haggle for the price of the house because, they're desperate.
Maybe.
Which is a huge thing. Mm-hmm. Anyways, he said, putting up two houses there is going to stick out like an old client of mine in Texas told me. Mm. It's going to stick out like a dog's balls.
Okay.
God forbid you take responsibility for such a vulgar phrase. Oh. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like an old client of yours from Texas said that. So anyways, while some of the neighbors expressed compassion, their focus remained on what the Broadus's stood to gain financially and what they themselves might lose.
I mean, I don't think anybody was gaining anything out of
anything.
So obviously,
they finally rejected the proposal. Because the truth is, that's how it is. People really don't care or give a fuck about your plights.
Well, and you're dramatic. I'm sorry, but that's a dramatic reaction to getting a letter, is tear down a whole house.
That's true. That is true.
That I honestly, now that I'm thinking about it, if I lived in a neighborhood where all the houses had been well established for over 100 years, I probably would be like, excuse me, you want to rip a perfectly good house down? I mean, obviously it's up to the owner, whoever owns it, to do it. So if he wanted to do it, he should have just ripped it down, and then he could have figured out what to do with it afterwards, I guess. But I would be kind of annoyed, because it's like, now I'm going to have to deal with
construction. Yeah, that's true. You know what? That's true. I can agree with that. Mm-hmm. I guess I was just thinking from like their I was thinking from their point of view, if this was a reasonable thing, like, if they really were that scared and really wanted to make their money back. But fucking, you're making, you have enough to buy.
It's unreasonable to think that the best option is to tear down the house instead of just selling it for a little bit less than what you got it for.
A lot less. Yeah. Which, fuck it, just sell it for a lot less.
I mean,
less
it's not even, it's not even, I don't know what the percentage is of that.
You
know what,
yeah, at least you would make most of your money back.
Yeah, it's under a third that you've lost.
Right.
Oh, well, okay.
So anyways, a new family with grown children and two big dogs agreed to rent 657 Boulevard, and they said that they weren't worried about the watcher, although he did have a clause in the lease that let him get out in case of another letter.
Yeah.
And there was another letter that they got.
Okay.
Which said, violent winds and bitter cold to the vile and spiteful Derek and his wench of a wife, Maria.
Mm.
Came out of nowhere 2.5 years later, and it was dated February 13th, which was the day the Broaddus's gave depositions in their lawsuit against the Woods.
You wonder who the watcher is? Turn around, idiots. Maybe you even spoke to me, one of the so-called neighbors who has no idea who the watcher could be. Or maybe you do know, and you are too scared to tell anyone. Good move. Oh, you think? Because maybe it's a scorned lover.
So the letter was less stylish, and it was more wrathful than the others, and it seemed the writer had been closely following the story. They had seen the media coverage and said, I walked by the news trucks when they took over my neighborhood and mocked me. It mentioned Derek's investigatory efforts.
So the letter continued. I watched as you watched from the dark house in an attempt to find me. Telescopes and binoculars are wonderful inventions. And the attempt to tear the house down, 657 Boulevard survived your attempted assault and stood strong with its army of supporters barricading its gates. My soldiers of the Boulevard followed my orders to a T. They carried out their mission and saved the soul of 657 Boulevard with my orders. All hail the Watcher.
Oh God.
Good Lord.
The renter was mentioned, and he was scared, but he agreed to stay if they installed cameras around the house, and the letter...
Did they take him down when they move?
I don't know. The letter indicated maybe around the house, around the outside.
Well, they should have had those there.
In the first place.
Yeah.
And the letter indicated revenge could come in many forms.
Maybe a car accident. Maybe a fire. Maybe something as simple as a mild illness that never seems to go away, but makes you feel sick day after day after day after day after day.
Jesus Christ.
Maybe the mysterious death of a pet. Loved ones suddenly die. Planes and cars and bicycles crash. Bones break.
Mm.
Okay. What is your point? And how do you control illnesses?
No,
and
you can't.
I mean, I don't know.
Derek took the letter to police headquarters, where a detective looked at the neighborhood map and traced a circle around the house 300 yards in diameter, suggesting the watcher must be somewhere in there. And Derek drew one much closer, saying that it was one of the 10 houses surrounding.
Hmm.
So hindsight made Derek and Maria wonder if they should have just sold their house at a loss early on, which they probably fucking should have.
Yeah.
And because they're now you've lost more in mortgages and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And they hoped that a few years of renting the place without incident would help them sell it. And the prosecutor's office was continuing its investigation, but they knew that it was unlikely the watcher would ever be caught and that legal punishment would probably be minimal.
Because they what did they really do?
Right. The watcher was also no longer the only person sending anonymous letters in Westfield, or maybe it was, but there was a Christmas Eve where several families received an envelope in their mailboxes, and these envelopes had been delivered by hand to the homes of people who had been the most vocal in criticizing the Broadduses.
Mm-hmm.
One of them had written, I wish we could go back to the days of tar and feathers. God, tar and feathers.
Lord.
I have just the couple in mind. Another family who got the letters said that it was weirdly poetic, just as the watcher had been, and that it had accused the families of speculating inaccurately about the Broadduses, and it included several stories about recent acts of domestic terrorism in which signs of brewing mental illness had gone unnoticed, and the typed letters were signed Friends of the Broaddus Family. The letter writer had clearly had the same type of penchant that the watcher had for anonymous notes and a simmering resentment, which was one that snaked its way through Westfield, making enemies of neighbors. The people who received the letters didn't know who sent them, but it had a familiar ring to them. Thank
you. The writer who wrote the article for this cut article, we talked about it earlier, he was interviewing Derek Broaddus, and he asked him straight up, did you write those letters that got sent out and were hand-delivered to the neighbors? And he looked at him for a moment and admitted he had. But this is not all the letters. This was the last round that he had sent to the neighbors that had been vocal about not wanting to let them knock the house down. Mm-hmm. He said he was ashamed of it. He wasn't proud of it, but he had done it because he was just so angry about the fact that he had no recourse for this entire situation that had been done against him. And he was at his wit's end, totally fed up. And he wanted to kind of like poke at these neighbors a little bit. One of the people who received the letters had never even met the Broaddus's, but I guess because they had spoken out against them, they had become, you know, enemy number one in their eyes. The Watcher had been obsessed with 657 Boulevard, and Derek became obsessed with the Watcher. It was a sick little turnabout, that's for sure. Everything in the letters that the Watcher had said kind of was set in motion as far as, like, creating this situation within this family that grew and grew and grew until they were pretty much cutting off their nose to spite their face and ended up losing money and making enemies out of everybody in a town where Maria had grown up for her entire life. So that's great. And then Derek received a fourth and final letter, which stated, "You are despised by the house and the Watcher won." So it did, I think. Whoever wrote those letters won. Definitely won out over that family.
I mean,
and like I was saying earlier, just to like kind of go out what I think it may be, it's either a spurned somebody and that knows them already, mm-hmm. and that was like, fuck this guy. Maybe it could even be somebody like he got a promotion
over him. Oh yeah. My God, yeah.
And he is seething by the day, seeing him move up, because you start getting promoted and it starts to become easier to get promoted more.
For sure.
And then make more money, and this person's still down at the bottom, pissed that this guy is buying a $1.355 million house and is going to ruin it for him. It's very possible. And in order to not be suspicious, if you're somebody that's smart, you're going to try to throw them off your trail by sending it to a couple other houses too. Mm-hmm. And by acting like you don't know them, but you overheard their names, mm-hmm. and all that little stuff. It's very possible that the letters were just a misdirect and just trying to scare the shit out of them to ruin this opportunity that they were jealous about, for
right,
sure.
Right.
Or it's a spirit.
Or it's a ghost.
Well, because what was the last thing that happened that I was like, oh, there was something that it said that I was like, oh. But it's probably just the rantings of a lunatic.
Yeah. So this is a spooky. I always hated The Watcher. I always hated 657. But now kind of doing a show or an episode on it, I'm like,
It's not as spooky as I thought. I know that some people might say otherwise once they are listening, but yeah. I definitely, in my opinion, it's like, the person was a bitter little pain in the ass. I mean, that's really what it was. And unfortunately, it's probably the case that this family could have just lived in that house and everything would have been perfectly fine.
Yeah.
And maybe they should have done that. I don't know, but it's hard to say because it's when you're there feeling like someone's watching, and like there are a lot of windows. It's a very open house. It's definitely you don't want to move into that house and then create like a fortress and never leave it,
right.
You know, or never do anything and just close yourselves inside.
Right.
But at the same time, I don't know if it's any better to have to move, never move in, move and then
and feel like
lose
you
all that money.
That was like your dream home, and I don't know.
And then also in turn, you have made neighbors hate each other. Mm-hmm. You've made lots of people hate you. Mm-hmm. Not to say it's your fault necessarily, mm-hmm. but you did take it and ran with it in a little bit of a, you yourself became a little bit of a lunatic.
Yeah.
You know?
He was watching The Watcher.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. But yeah, so.
Hey, thank you, Stiglitz, for suggesting this case. It was a lot funnier. It was very fun. And one more final thing. We wanted to just quickly shout out a small business based out of Las Vegas, Nevada, who does custom orders of tumblers and little gifts. It's at _LittleLunarCraftCo. She does the cutest tumblers and gifts.
Yeah, so go check her out on Instagram at Little Lunar Craft Co. spelled exactly how you might assume.
Assume it might be.
We'll share her in our stories after we post this episode too.
Yes.
But anyway, we hope you enjoyed your time here with us today. It was our first time to live stream our recording. And so if you joined us on the live stream,
sorry.
Hey, babies. But also, yeah, sorry. It was a little bit rough, but it'll be better next time.
Yeah, we're going to. It's been an idea that I've like had in my mind. Like, I'd love to do that, but who knows how it will go. And we know how rough it's going to be. And we know how many mistakes we'll make. And we know how like a real recording goes, but it's like a little bit of an insight on how it goes week to week.
Yeah. And you can see the various screw ups that are inevitable because it just is the case, but you know,
it just is because nobody's perfect.
We're humans. Okay. Yeah. But anyway, thanks again. And we love you. We'll talk to you soon. Actually, I was going to say, and I didn't really come up with a name for it, but this is like, I feel like we both started working full time kind of recently. I mean, in the past year-ish, which I was not doing prior to that. And it is a fucking bear to do a full-time job and try to do as thorough episodes as possible. So we were thinking like, you know, we would do like every other week releases or something. And then I was like, but I kind of hate the idea. Like, if we can get an episode done before that, then maybe we should. And so I'm thinking that it's probably going to end up being two big ass episodes. Like, this is going to be long, but it wasn't like
super
in-depth research where I was buried in two books for, you know, 2 weeks. So, And so maybe it's like two full-on ass episodes and then one where it's a little more relaxed. And I don't want to say relaxed, but a little more like, I did a good, as much thorough research as possible, but it's like, there just isn't as much information or something. Right. So that might be what we can do so we can bring out more episodes to you guys until we can one day full-time do our podcast, because that's what our goal is. So
yeah,
if you want to help us do that, you can head on over to patreon.com/creepitrealpod and join us, join the family, join our little congregation of creepers, and you can support us, help support you with more episodes and other special content.
Another thing I was thinking is if you want to help sponsor us.
Yeah.
I mean, we are obviously open to that. We were joking about
Waterloo and LaCroix. Monster and LaCroix, but we'll take, if you work for LaCroix and you're like, these girls would be the perfect representatives to spread the word about sparkling water, let me know. I drink it so much that I probably spend $100 a week on
it.
She
doesn't drink regular water anymore, you guys.
Well, my mom bought me this thing called a Berkey, which it's like this big water filter stand thing. It has like its own little stand and everything, and so I haven't set it up yet. I just got it, but she sent it to me because she heard how much I was spending on water, and I was like, well, thank you so much. It's like $300 or something. Jesus. Insane. I was like, well, you could spend $300, but it might help me drink a little bit more regular water, and then my LaCroix and Waterloo habit can be more of like
a
treat. A little treat. But anyway, yeah, just email us if you have any ideas about anything whatsoever. We love you. We'll see you later. Have a great life.
Have a great everything.
Keep it real.